I was thinking like how to approach like this kind of like introduction and stuff. And there are like many ways to derive diffusion, and there are many ways like to present it and introduce it. And in this kind of like introduction, my main goal, I think, is to you give the ability to read the papers on this topic, because like there are like you can like see it from very different perspectives under different flavors and so on and so forth, but there are like fundamental papers, not fundamental, they're just like the first papers, I would say, and like a huge chunk of research is like building on top of them and on top of these ideas. So I decided like that's I'll try to give you like the easiest introduction into the main concepts behind this line of work, so you will be able to read the papers. And I don't focus here on results, mostly on like concepts and some particular occasions. But like I'm sure like you all are aware of like these results of in image generation, right? And this is I think doesn't require any like introduction or like discussion. So let's yeah, and like I try to keep everything very simple. So if something is not obvious to you, then you can ask me, and I'll try to explain, or I'll try to derive something, or I'll just ask you to trust me, because something, of course, like they're like very fundamental, like Fokker-Planck equation and the notion of diffusion itself. It's a very like fundamental thing. So sometimes I'll just ask you to trust me. So the setup is follows like is the following. Like it's kind of similar to ideas of annealing in physics. We want to build a generative model that like given like data samples, so like we think of it as a distribution, but we really have only observations from these distributions, right? And we want to build we want kind of like make our problem easier in a like progressive way. We wanna split it into like a sequence of easier problems that we usually think of as a time-dependent process. So we would like to define some time-dependent process that starts from these data samples and ends up in some very simple distributions such as a Gaussian, for example. So from the forward process, like first of all, like we fix it. We will discuss it in the first part of the talk. We fixed it once for all, and there is no machine learning in the forward process. We just like fix it. And second thing, which is very important for the forward process, is that we would like to be able to easily sample from it. So, like, given data point from here, we would like to generate some like noise. And like you can think of it like it's yeah, it's quite easy and straightforward in some sense. You just like remove all the information about your data and just like generate a random normal noise. It's a bit trickier like in practice, because we also would like to define like a proper like diffusion and stuff. But yeah, I don't think we'll have any troubles there. So we would also like to have some solutions in analytic form in like we for example, we would like to understand more about the conditional distribution. Like once again, like given a point from this, we would like to understand what would be the conditional distribution at any moment of time. And this like things would allow us to discuss then the backward process and it's not that obvious and straightforward why the backward process even exists, because like if it's a diffusion, then like our like physical intuition says that, yeah, okay, we cannot just throw in a bunch of particles, wait while the heat motion gives distribution to some like stationary, and we cannot reverse this process, right? So, but on a computer we can, and that's what we care about, and that's what we discuss, and on the backward process we actually use machine learning, and we use like deep learning in particular to train the model that reverses the process. The reverses in that sense that like it takes a sample from the normal distribution and generates a sample from the data distribution, right? And the backward process thus defines the generative model. I hope it's clear. Is it? Okay.
So I'm not clear on the forward process.
Sorry?
I'm not clear on the forward process. So you start with some data, some samples that are distributed according to some probability.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what evolves seems to me is the distribution of those data. So if I had to be able to model the distribution of those data at each data point, I would expect the parameters of this distribution to change. But then you say the model is fixed. So does it mean that the same model generates different distribution at each time steps?
Yes, in some sense, you can think of it like as follows. You're given with like a bunch of images, right? Or like some data points. Then you do like a very simple thing. You just add like a normal noise to the image, and the whole distribution will be different, right? But it will be also dependent on the magnitude of noise. And if the magnitude is very high, right, then you have only noise, pretty much only noise in the end, because you kind of destroyed all the information what was in the image, right? So you are doing this iteratively, or you vary the magnitude of noise, which we parameterize with time. And when we add no noise, so this distribution, it's just like data. If we add a little bit more noise, these like two Gaussians, let's say, they become like more flat. And when you take this process to infinity, you have only noise. So that's like a crude description, because we also do additional things to stay within the same scale. But that's the intuition behind it. And we'll go to the forward process right now. Does it give you like more understanding?
Yes.
Okay, cool. The main idea is that like the forward process, like intuitively, we can design it like very easily. We just take the data we observe and we just corrupt it with noise, and we are like pretty good with corruption, right? So, but to be more like rigorous and precise, we want to take the diffusion process as the forward process. And the diffusion process is described by the Fokker-Planck equation. So QT is the density of our particles or like samples. And this equation defines how the density changes in time, right? This guy here is like a drift term that tells us how the particles change, like they drift in the space like deterministically. So if we just consider this equation without this term, it would correspond to that we take a bunch of samples and we kind of let them flow along some like vector field, and the distribution changes somehow, right? So it's like, I know, like a density of some liquid you can think of. But there is another term here which corresponds to the like stochastic part. So the density changes for like two reasons. One reason is the deterministic change of the density, and the other reason is that we also like it's like a Brownian motion. Every particle kind of jiggles on the way, and we know through this term how the density changes due to it.
So, of course. Do you have like an explicit representation of the density, or instead of a focal plane, are you using some sort of Langevin? Because I would imagine easily like corrupting the data with noise in the Langevin-like equation. But for the focal plane, you need to have like analytical representation, right, of the density.
Yeah. So, like, I would propose to take this perspective that like we don't yet know how to implement things, and okay. We're just like wondering in on the theoretical side of what's going on. So let's just not think like what we are given, what we are not, because this is like a diffusion process, right? And there is some density, like theoretical, right? And we don't know it, yeah, of course. And in practice, we would like, yeah, to sample from this density, we would run a Langevin dynamics. However, right now we want to understand kind of like the math behind. So what's going on? Because that would be kind of crucial to our understanding what we can do and what we cannot. So, and I propose first to think about the Fokker-Planck equation and how the density changes. Let's say that our case is like very simple and we can solve it analytically and we know the density analytically. So I think you guys know the Fokker-Planck equation because you were with the physics background. So, but just to be clear that like it allows us, like let's say we know Q0, which is like initial density, and we know the drift, we know the diffusion term, and like we have, let's say, like it's just like theoretical, but let's say we have like infinite computational power, we can then actually evolve our density according to this equation, right? We can just define like from Q0, we can go to Q dt of x, because we essentially know the derivative in time, right? So this is like a PD, but we can use it to kind of like in a naive way to propagate our density in time. So but like we would like to choose some like specific drift and specific diffusion term. So diffusion term is here. We would like to choose it in this way that we start like, yeah, it's kind of weird, but let's say we start with any distribution, whatever we have, and we end up in a normal distribution, standard normal distribution. And this is very convenient for defining the generative process, right? Because we don't need to care about the particular distribution of our data. We just plug in any distribution, we corrupt it somehow, and we get a sample from a standard normal one, right? So if we would be able to define the forward process like this and then inverse it, then the generative modeling becomes kind of easier. We just sample from the normal one and go back to the data. But we'll get back to it in the second half. So the intuition is the following. Let's choose like a specific vector field that basically contracts all our data. It's like, it just guides all our like particles towards the center. So you can think of it like if we don't have any noise, right? If we don't have any noise and we just take a distribution and like drive it like according to these vector fields, then in the end, everything will be in the center, because that's how we define like our dynamics, right? So all the particles, they are just like contracted to zero. But since we add some noise on the way, we cannot get like a perfect contraction to zero. There will be like some distribution around, and this distribution will be standard normal. And so let's consider this vector field for this reason, that like it allows us to contract any distribution into the standard normal one. So we can now wonder what's the conditional distribution. The conditional distribution in the following sense, let's say once again, like here we have some point x zero, and we would like to understand if we use this vector field, so what would be the conditional distribution if we start from x zero? So might be something different. So we would like to find this distribution. And this is equivalent to just like, if we start from, this is equivalent to this. Let's say we start with a distribution, which is a delta function. Yeah, like that's a very like popular trick in physics once again, because that's a Green's function, right? Pretty much. You have your like PDE, and then like you say, okay, what's kind of like the solution if we have a delta function? And then we could probably potentially find the whole solution for the whole distribution, but we don't really care about it. So we want to know what happens if we start with this delta function. What will be the distribution of these dynamics that we choose at any time t? So we know, like, once again, I'll do here like everything in 1D. So everything in 1D, but like any D will be exactly the same up to like some little changes. So we know that the Fokker-Planck equation, and we simply plug in our like UT. So UT here, we just expand it like this. And it's hard to solve it right away. It's hard to understand what, like, we can kind of guess the solution, but it's hard to see it right away. So let's solve like an easier problem. Let's say that we don't want to know how the exact way of QT, the exact form of QT. Let's say we know, we want to see how the mean of the expected value of our distribution changes in time. And this is like much easier problem. So the derivative of the expected value is just this guy, right? The derivative of the density, because X doesn't depend on time. And then we just plug in, like we use it like from the Fokker-Planck equation, we plug it in here. And that's pretty much it. So we, for the first term, we see that, like, first of all, this guy doesn't depend on X. So we can just don't, like, we just don't consider it. This thing is the derivative of QT and X multiplied by X. And we just do some integration by parts and get this, right? So that's like a trivial integral by parts. And this guy is kind of the same. We just do the integration by parts twice. So here we have the second derivative. So that's why we do it twice. And it will be the second derivative of X, which is zero, right? In the end, we have only this term, and this term is exactly the expectation. So then obviously the solution for the expectation is this, right? Because that's just like separable variables OD. Okay. So the same algebra you can do for sigma t, like for the variance, right? So you just start with the expression that expectation over QT x minus mu t squared, you take the full derivative, and you can do it as an exercise. But there is nothing like difficult there. It's just like, once again, the whole this field is about integration by parts, to be honest. But like, yeah, the same tricks, and you'll derive this formula. And in the end, we can say, okay, we start with a like with a, so we start with a single particle at x zero. Let's put x here. So this is x zero, and we kind of add some noise, and our drift term is very simple, is just linear. So at some time t, we should get a Gaussian at some mu t with the sigma t as a scale. And we can just guess, we can just say, okay, QT is the conditional, like the distribution of our particle at time t. And let's just say that it's this thing. And then, like, once again, with some algebra, you can just plug this in into the Fokker-Planck equation and see that this is indeed a solution. So there is like nothing complicated here. But we can make actually like very good observations. So we start from like a delta function. We start from a single point, and at time t, we have this distribution. But if you look at it, for example, if you choose beta of tau to be like a positive function, then this term just grows with time, right? So then this whole multiplicative coefficient vanishes with time, right? As well as this thing vanishes with time. So let's take, I know, like beta tau to be, I know, 10 t, then the integral, or like 100 t, then the integral of this is the integral of this to 1, from 0 to 1 d tau beta tau is something like 50, right? But exponent to minus 50 or like minus 25, whatever, it's essentially a zero. So this mean the expectation goes to zero, and this guy goes to zero. So the variance goes to one. And it happens independently of where we start from. Like, it doesn't depend on x0. For any x0, will converge to this. That's why, like, whatever object we take, we end up in the standard normal distribution. I mean, so, like, rigorously speaking, this term is not zero, right? Never. And it depends on x0. But now let's think kind of like more like in computational terms. If you just take exponent to minus 100, it's essentially zero. And that's why this weird process that contracts all the points to zero and adds some noise on the go, it's, if you take any distribution, it will make you a standard normal Gaussian. Okay, I hope it's clear.
Yeah, so I have one question. So yeah. In the beginning, you mentioned like this theoretical image where we have access to Q, right? But then switching to delta functions, that's basically where you have a data set, right? You have a finite set. You just, like, your data distribution is just delta functions, right?
Yeah, so like it's, you can think that, for now, you can think that we have like both the density and like samples, but in practice, we have only samples from some density, and it's yeah, like rigorously speaking, once again, like it's just like a sum over the delta functions. But right. If you just like take a sample, like you take like 1,000 samples from a normal distribution, you think of it like differently. You have more information. You don't consider it as a set of delta functions. And here, like, I mean, the fact that this argument applies to a delta function and a sum of delta function. So like a finite sum of delta function is not that far from any distribution, right? Because you can, yeah, we like in practice, we have this. Oh, I'll take a different color. So in practice, we have this. But then like, if you just take n to like infinity, once again, like intuitively, not rigorously, and you say that like, then it becomes like a proper distribution, right? So it like, you can think that and like your xi comes from like a normal distribution, right? Then it will be the sum becomes the integral over dy, you have d of x minus y, and xi distributed is like normal or like p of y, so it becomes p of x. And that's kind of like the same thing, right? So actually, whatever you have, it doesn't matter. Any distribution here, this process will like effectively collapse to like a standard normal. Even if you take like not like a set of images, even if you like sample from like, I know, let's say uniform or like some other distribution. Doesn't matter. It will still be like effectively like a standard normal distribution.
Right. Okay. Thanks. Yeah.
So, yeah. So like when Q zero is P of X, we now actually understand something more about our like intermediate distribution. So we know the density. We know the distribution of the particle X. Okay, maybe here is better. We know the distribution of particle X when we start from X zero. So let's just write it down like as a two-step process. Let's say we sample from our distribution P of X zero, and then we sample from these our like new points. So I should put t here probably, yeah, because it depends on time. And let's say, yeah, so, and thus we can sample from qt of x, right? We just take a sample from our data or like our initial distribution. We propagate along according to this like kernel, this guy. And this is a very simple distribution to sample from. I mean, beta of tau, we can choose some like simple schedule, like a linear, like, or like quadratic, whatever. So you can think that this is essentially sampling from n of x given x zero multiplied by, I don't know, let's say ct, and with the variance one minus eta t, where you know these things you know analytically. And so that's essentially any normal noise. That's it. And this is as well a diffusion, right? And as I said like previously, it's very easy to simulate the forward process in practice. So we have like, let's say we have like a data set sample, an image, or like a tabular data, some observation. Then we just take it, like we sample from our data, and then we just corrupt it with some noise, and that's it. And we get a sample from any time t, and when t goes to one, all these samples, they converge to standard normal. So, yeah, of course.
So going back to your derivation of the mean, derivative of the mean, there's a point where you assume that X is time independent, but it seems to me that it should be time dependent.
Oh, but X is not time dependent here because that's just a variable. So this is like definition of mean, right? Of the expected value. I probably have to write it down. So let's define it like mu t equals qt, the expectation, okay, of qt. I don't know what notation you prefer, but regardless of this notation, right, that's essentially the integral over the whole space rd dx qt of X multiplied by X, right? So X here is like just a variable in the integral. So once we want to know d dt of mu t, right? We just plug this, like we just, this derivative goes through the integral, right? And it's just d dt of qt of x multiplied by x. And x is like a time independent variable of the integration. And that's why it is essentially dx qt dot x, right?
So you assume that the measure doesn't change with time, but then later on when you obtain your, I mean, I'm a little bit confused because when you obtain your Gaussian distribution and you have this kind of Markov process where you apply some sort of Green function to come back to the previous distribution, now X depends on time. right? And I assume that the measure should change.
So the measure, so the reference measure, let's say, is a Lebesgue measure, okay? The reference measure doesn't change. But we take this density with respect to the Lebesgue measure, QT, right? And it changes, of course. And this is the derivative of our density. Oh, okay, maybe Q dot is not the best notation. So there is this derivative. And the law, how the measure changes in time, is exactly the Fokker-Planck equation.
Okay. I think you should have written probably partial derivative respect to t, so you would have made it more clear. Because when it was derivative outside the integral, and then because you were marginalizing over x, yeah.
I mean, like mu t here is not a function, right? Mu t is a vector. It's like a function of time. So like the partial derivative and the total derivative, they don't really, but yeah, I agree that like here it's better. This, I just use like dots is, I don't know. I thought it's like a common notation. But anyway. Do you guys have any other questions on the forward process? So like in a nutshell, it's just like take your image and add some normal noise properly scaled. Oh, you also like shrink the image to be like zero. That's pretty much it. And now we probably can talk about like reversing the diffusion, reversing this process. So let's start once again like with the like Fokker-Planck equation. That's the same equation I discussed, right? But just like any vector field, any diffusion term. And we can rewrite it like this, right? Because that's the definition of the Laplacian. And then like this guy, we can rewrite it like this. Because I mean, Nabla log is 1/Q Nabla Q, and this guy essentially is this guy. And then we can add these two terms. Oops, I forgot minus here. Then we can we see that like this term is almost this term, right? Because like here we have like Nabla Q, Nabla Q. And stuff. So we can just consider them together. And we can say that this is another vector field. And thus we can arrive to the continuity equation. And the continuity equation basically means that our samples evolve according to the vector field. And this is like a very like non-physical intuition, because what essentially I'm trying to say here, okay, yeah, like diffusion can be simulated as follows. You take your Fokker-Planck equation, you see the Langevin equation here, you propagate your particle along the vector field, and you add some noise. And that's one way to simulate it. But another way to simulate it is kind of come up with a vector field that guides all the particles completely deterministically and rearranges them in the space such that they are distributed as if we have simulated the Langevin dynamics. And the way it's simulated is completely non-physical, because I mean, there are no such particles that kind of like implement. However, in nature, right? However, like in silica, like on a computer, we don't care. We don't care as long as our particles distributed according to this distribution, right? And And this is kind of like a way to go from like nature to a computer. And why this way? So the continuity equation, once again, this is like one of the like most fundamental equations. And I'm sure like you know it pretty well, like from like Maxwell laws, for example, right? So it tells us how the density changes, density of a charge, density of like here, it's like a density of a probability mass, right? So if all of the like particles drift along this vector field Vt, according to this ODE, then it tells us how the density changes of the like probability mass in this particular case. And why is it cool? Like, so because like the relic, because it allows us on a computer once again to reverse the diffusion, which is kind of like a bit, I mean, at least for me, it was kind of peculiar that you can like simulate your particles, adding some like random noise and you can map them like to a Gaussian or like just like to like uniform distribution, right? You kind of like add more and more like entropy to your system. And then you can define a process that maps everything back, kind of reverses like time in some sense. And yeah, like you can see it very easily that like if everything kind of is guided by this ODE, then the integration forward is just this integral, right? So the particle at time one, it's like the coordinate at time zero plus just this integral that we can implement via like a numerical scheme. And the backward integration is very easy. Oops, I forget the minus here. So the initial coordinate is essentially the coordinate, the final coordinate minus this integral that we can integrate kind of backwards, right? Starting from x of t1. I think you know like perfectly that ODEs are like invertible because they're like unique, because there exists like unique solution to any ODE, right? And that's how we can invert this thing. But now we can say, okay, so well, like if we know the forward process, if we know the Fokker-Planck equation, this line of derivations tells us the formula for this magic vector field that can guide our particles back to their places, right? And we just take ut, which is like minus one half, oops, I forgot here. So I just remind you quickly that ut is this guy. And and this is our goal now. We want to know how to approximate Nabla log Q, because Nabla log Q we know how to sample from, right? So I'll remind you what it is quickly. It's this guy. We know how to sample from, because we have data samples, we can add normal noise, but we don't know the density. But now we understand that, like, since we define this magic vector field that can drive everything forward and backward, maybe if we have the access to Nabla log density, I mean, we know that if we have the access to Nabla log density, we can then reverse the diffusion. And there is like a machine learning method called square matching. It's very simple. The setting is like the following. Once again, like regardless of the diffusion, it's just like a mathematical problem. You have samples from Q0, and you want to estimate this guy, Nabla log Q. And you do like a very, very straightforward thing. So loss, let's define this loss. So this function S is a neural network or like a machine learning model or like your ansatz, whatever you call it. It takes X as input, outputs some vector. This the same dimension as Nabla log density, the dimensionality of our space, right? And these are like parameters. So these are like and we want to minimize this loss. So like you agree that like if we can set this to zero, then S equals Nabla log Q, right? So then we just open the brackets. This is like the first term, the last term, and the middle term. So once we open the brackets, we see that the first term is fine. We can estimate it from samples because it's just like expectation of the squared of our function. The last term doesn't depend on parameters theta. So we just, I don't know, we can just remove it. So it doesn't bother us. And the problems we have are the problems in the middle term, because to estimate the middle term, we would like to take the expectation over the samples, which is fine, we have the samples, but we also have to know this guy, right? Nabla log U, and we don't know it. So, but we can avoid this problem once again by integration by parts. That's the only trick. And yeah, so this is like integral over dx, q, s, nabla log q. And this is clearly like we just plug q in here, like, right? So nabla log q, it is like 1 over q nabla q. So this guy and this guy. And then like integration by parts, we have this. And this is clearly like we can rewrite it as the expectation over q nabla s. So thus we see that the final loss is just like 1/2. Oh, I have it here. It's just like 1/2 squared plus the expectation of this guy. And now we see that like we only need the expectation. We can plug in our like favorite parametric model, and then we have the unbiased estimate of the loss. So we can take the unbiased estimate of the gradients with respect to the parameters of our like parametric family. So we can minimize it. So we can learn this course from samples. Okay. In practice, it doesn't work well, to be honest, because of some reasons, like technical details, I would say. However, there is like another thing called denoising square matching. And the denoising square matching was developed exactly with the purpose when our Q of X equals to this. So it's like a composite distribution of some initial distribution and some like kernel that noises the initial distribution. So then you can do it as an exercise once again, like it's like several line proof that then minimizing this is equivalent to minimizing this. And this task might be much easier because just remember that like Nabla log k, I had it, for example, here. This is k, right? And Nabla log k is something like very simple. So it's in, okay. It's this, right? And once again, like xi and eta, they're just like some functions of time that we know analytically. It's like something very simple. So we can pretty much learn Nabla log u, but that means that we can plug it in into these like vector field formula, and that means that we can reverse the whole process. So we use the conditional kernel that we have derived, and we generate samples, and we learn like Nabla log density using the denoising score matching. Then we know that this vector field, it takes our like particles forward and backward, so we can generate new samples using this. We can generate, we can just sample from the standard normal, because we know that we contracted the whole distribution to the standard normal, and we can integrate it back using this ODE, like right. And that's it. That's how we can do generation. And that's pretty much the whole idea behind diffusion models. We can do some exercises. We can discuss some like things that are not maybe clear. And also I can talk a little bit about like what I did in these models. Whatever guys you prefer.
I have two questions.
Yep.
So the first question is maybe a naive one, because from the derivation, we kind of, or maybe I missed something there, not assume that we are doing stochastic calculus here, both in the way we do derivative and integrals. So because we are doing that over stochastic variables. So I wonder whether, I mean, taking into account stochastic calculus will change something.
I mean, that's just like a way you can define, like, so for any Fokker-Planck equation, so this guy you cannot probably do via stochastic calculus. However, like things like this, you can do with the Ito lemma, I think, these guys. It's just another like mathematical representation, and they are like one-to-one, like Fokker-Planck equation and this like Ito calculus. It's just not really necessary here.
So my wondering was like, will it not give, or maybe will it help in not needing this denoising part? In case you get additional parameter that kind of somehow takes into account.
Oh, here.
Yeah.
Oh, they are like completely equivalent. So like the in that sense that the global minima of this equals to the global minima of this. And in the end, this thing is just much, much easier to minimize than doing this, than doing the score matching.
I see. Okay.
Not the second question is partially.
Go ahead.
Partially because, like, for example, like one of the reasons is that you have to estimate the divergence here, and it requires you a lot of it. You either do like Hutchinson trick to get like a stochastic estimator of the trace of the Jacobian, or you do a lot of like backward passes. You do the number of backward passes by then like the number of dimensions you have. So it might be very hard. And this guy doesn't require anything. This thing we know analytically, and this thing we just plug in like a specific architecture for a neural network, and then we take like square, and that's it. It runs.
My quick second question. So if we know already that, I mean, we're going to have a Gaussian distribution, then maybe we don't need to do the forward pass. We just do the backward pass. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, in some sense, we don't really do the forward pass. We define the forward pass, like the forward process, to actually learn. This is like, that's what you do like during training. During training, you sample from these like marginals, like you sample your data, you denoise it with like some, like your Gaussian, you noise it with some Gaussian, and then you train this thing. And this is time dependent. So yeah, I have it here. So this guy like depends on time, and you want to integrate these guys over time. So you just sample like different, like samples at different time. You have this objective to minimize, and that's what you do during training. So during training, you're kind of like doing the forward process. But on the way back, like during the inference, you straight or like you generate like standard normal random variable right away, and you just integrate backwards, and that's it.
Sweet, super cool. Thanks. Yeah, that sounds.
So, can I ask, like, where is the? Because I assume there's many people working on this, and so, like, where are people trying to improve things? Is it like with the parametric model? Is it like, can you play with this vector field? Like, can you choose a different, like, contracting vector field, or like? You make gains.
That's a good question. So there are like different ways. For example, some people try to find a better like forward process. Some people even try to find like such a simple thing as like this, like what's the schedule for the noise, like this parameter beta t. Some people, but that's kind of like already done. Then like different, like people like understood how to do like different processes. So like my work in particular is like, we made an algorithm that works just like you have samples, and that's it. You don't know anything about the forward or backward process. You just have samples for any time t. You have samples from your distribution, and this is like a space of distributions, and you have like any path between distributions, whatever it is. And then you can still learn these vector fields that goes forward and backward. And other things to do, like other, like people try to do it like for like niche applications. For example, if they work with I know, like with molecules or like with some kind of like specific kind of data, then this Gaussian noise might be not really suitable. Then you want to try to define some other process that is specific to your particular data. Some people try to like do it like on a discrete space, but then it's essentially they say, okay, we now have like not a continuous distribution, but like discrete. So we dequantize it, we map it to the Gaussian, then like we reverse the process, and then we quantize it, something like this. Some people consider like, okay, like the process is Gaussian, but or like some other things. Let's derive like another like learning technique. It's like, it really depends. Some people don't consider even like a noise. Some people consider like deterministic processes forward and backward. And yeah. But I really cannot say like about something, you know, like this thing was developed like for like quite a long time. Have been developed for a long time. And it's really hard to say what are the like main directions there right now, because like for images it works like very well, and there are some results saying, oh, we do like this instead of this and then we get Solta. But to be honest, I don't believe them, like, because I mean everybody needs Solta just to publish a paper. And if you really go to the like initial publication, like the numbers are better, like something like this. It's I think that's like it's the most of the like use in of these particular models is actually in the niche applications, and a lot of people try to adapt them to their particular domain.
That's very nice. Yeah, because I remember, or I know it's in your paper, like I think you've thought about like learning like Hamiltonian dynamics, right?
Like, yeah, so like one of the things you can do here is that's like if it's like a distribution of particles that is guided by some physical law, and you kind of have like and understanding what the law is, so you can then like infer the Hamiltonian or like something like this. But it's essentially, yeah, like we were wondering actually like about like generalizing, like how general can it be, this whole approach. And it turns out that like, yeah, any distribution path, as long as it's continuous, right, as long as like distribution density doesn't change abruptly within an instance, then you can recover, like then you can like learn just from samples forward, backwards, and you can even recover some things as like Hamiltonian or like potential.
You have reference to that? Hamiltonian learning. You have a reference?
That's my paper. I can, yeah. So it's called action matching, and I can send probably, I know, like send probably a list of references after the talk if you would like to kind of go deeper into the topic.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Things is very, very clear. Yeah, I don't know if there are any more questions. All right, let's thank Kirill and give him like a virtual